Okay, good morning, good vach. Welcome back to our bi-weekly shiur here on the Tshuva series. We're doing Har Tzvi. We've been doing, I think this is our 13th week, which makes this our, something like 15th and 16th Tshuvas or something like that, which is, it's great. That means we've gotten a really good sampling of Rav Tzvi Hazak Frank's style of psak, and even if you haven't necessarily picked up the methodology of psak halacha, that's okay. Unless anyone here has to paskin anytime soon, it's okay not to pick up entirely. But you felt the style. You see the chachma, the uniqueness of the style of psak. You see the excitement of the sugya behind the psak halacha. And that's a lot of what we gained until now. I was planning that today would be the last shiur in the series on Shalosh Tshuvos Har Tzvi of Rav Tzvi Hazak Frank, which means that the next time we meet, we would pivot and move towards another sefer of Shalosh Tshuvos, unless I heard there's rumors that people want to replace me with Matt, that maybe starts saying this year. So if it's me, it will switch svarim. If it's Matt, it's up to him, which maybe he'll do his own svarim. I don't know. He hasn't decided yet necessarily. But we're going to hopefully, because the might be another pivot to a different sefer. Because it's our last year on the topic, I thought it would be appropriate to make a kiddush in honor of finishing our limud. Then I went on to the Kol website and saw how much we charge for a sponsorship for kiddush. It's crazy. I can't possibly do that. So instead, we're going to do a shiur on Hilchos Kiddush. Is that just as good for everyone, basically? We'll do it that way. In all seriousness, the Kol is always looking for sponsors. So there are opportunities as we budget and go towards the year two of our Kol. This Siyat HaShemaya, we are looking for sponsors for all sorts of things. You could sponsor a shiur, you could sponsor a week of learning. We're looking to fill the months of learning with sponsors, which is a significant contribution to the Kol and really helps build our impact. But really, we'll take money for anything. So if you want to sponsor which tie I wear that day, or you want to sponsor, you know, my yarmulke, or you want to, anything, we'll take money for. So really, you have opportunities. You can email me at the email address on the bottom of the page, or go to our website, or email our office at yukollla.com, and you can find opportunities to help support in that way, and it's very much appreciated. We're going to start, like I said, with halachas of kiddush. I have two tshuvas here on the page for you. We'll start on page number one, which is Har Tzvi Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Nun Ches. The truth is, we probably won't get to the second tshuva, which is okay. I'd rather do a thorough job on one of them than do a less serious attempt at the second one. But the second tshuva you're going to want to look at in your own time, at least. The second tshuva is about the permissibility, or the opposite of permissibility, of making kiddush on schnapps, whether it's okay to make kiddush on schnapps. To be clear, if you make kiddush on a revius of schnapps, it's not so much of a shayla. The question that we want to talk about, if we get to that tshuva, which we might not, is whether a person can make make kiddush on Shabbos on just a shot glass, less than a revius, a small amount, an ounce or two of a schnapps. So that's a question that's worth discussing, perhaps today or perhaps another time. But the first tshuva we're going to discuss is again the shorter tshuva on page number one, and that's the tshuva Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Nun Ches 158. So if you look inside, if you have the sheet, the first line says Leharav Yud Shin Horovitz Zal Cheshvan Tafresh Pei Zayin. Tafresh Pei Zayin is 1927. So what is the significance of that date? So the truth is, generally speaking, we usually jump into the sugya. Maybe we give a little background to the mitzvah that we're talking about. Maybe we mention some of the gemaras that pertain to the tshuva that Rav Tzvi Hazak Frank is about to write. In this instance, I want to do something different. Instead of beginning with the sugya, instead of beginning the background of the learning, of the lamdas and the sugya over here, we're actually going to start with the background of historic nature, historical background. We're going to try to understand not what the tshuva is about at first. We're actually going to understand who the tshuva is written to. Who is this Yud Shin Horowitz? And also, what's significant about the year 1927? What happened in 1927 that this tshuva was written? So, if you know your American history, you know that during the 19th century, well, you don't need to know history to know this part, but if you know during the 19th century, alcoholism, domestic violence, things like that, political corruption, they were rampant. And the society, not wrongly at all, they thought that maybe a lot of this, all of the problems that were existing in society, it was a sort of like a morally decrepit society. It was corrupt and crumbling at its core. It's hard to imagine a society like that. I don't know where you could see such a thing. But apparently things were going downhill, and not incorrectly, people thought that it might be attributable to alcoholism, to people consuming alcohol, to people doing drugs and things of that nature. And because of that, the way this is started, by the way, historically is very interesting. It didn't start as a gzeira. It didn't start as a law that was passed, but it started as different communities taking upon themselves that they would cut alcohol out of the community in some way, shape, or form. So in what you see in some shuls where at some point shuls go dry because of incidents that happen in a shul, you would see communally, and not only in the Jewish community, specifically not in the Jewish community, you saw communities starting to cut alcohol out of the diet and try to find ways to prevent people from over-drinking or really drinking at all. And what that escalated to eventually is that in the year 1920, the 18th Amendment to the United States Constitution was ratified. And that was the prohibition that we know colloquially, the prohibition, which basically outlawed any drinking, any importation, transportation, sale of alcoholic beverages in our country. That lasted from 1920 to 1933. That's how long America was sober for. So the prohibition, it presented a lot of challenges, obviously, to people who were addicted to alcohol, but it also presented religious challenges. I think that's obvious to all of us. The major challenge was that, and it's not true only of the Jewish people, but we only care about them right here, but it's also true of the Christians with their rituals as well. But the religious rituals, like for us, Kiddush and Shabbos and Yontif, you have a bris, you have a chasna, we use wine a lot at different simchas, at different events, at Kos Shel Bracha. We need the wine as part of our religious practice. And so that caused a major impediment for how we could practice our religion. And that goes against other parts of the Constitution. There's supposed to be a freedom of religion. And because of that, the government was misyachis to this. They related to this. They understood that this was an issue. And they passed what was called the Volstead Act. The Volstead Act was basically, it was basically an allowance. It was a enabling legislation where basically they said it's true that you cannot consume, import, transport, or sell alcoholic beverages, but if you have a, I don't know what they, if they had a certificate or something like that, you have to apply, you have to register that you were a religious institution, Jewish or Christian or whatever ones they deemed were appropriate for this, then you were able to apply for a license and the shul or the church would be able to purchase and utilize alcohol, wine in particular, for their events and for their religious practices. Sacramental wine. So what obviously happened once that was allowed? So in the beginning it was good, and it's definitely a noble idea, and it definitely makes a lot of sense. But basically what would happen is that there were some shuls, even some rabbis, who would take advantage of that process. And they basically, shuls would have 100 members, and they would purchase wine for 200 members, and they would sell the other 100 cases of wine or whatever for a high price on the black market to Goyim, to non-religious Goyim. And basically they would create their own little black market of bootlegging these alcoholic products to people who weren't necessarily religious, but were able to tap in to the extra reserve that they built up by ordering more alcohol than was necessary. In fact, it got to the point where people were forming fake shuls in order to buy alcohol and sell it. So it became a tremendous business, an illegal business, and it was a huge problem. Why was it a huge problem? Because that's a chil Hashem. Because, you know, there are instances where this isn't true. When it's persecution and things like that, we don't look to the government as exemplars in any way, and there's certainly in terms of moral code, we don't look at the government as the exemplars of moral code, but a government that we live under, that we respect, we have a halacha, dina malchus adina. Paying your taxes is not a midas chasidus, it's not a chumrah. Some people see it as a kula, but it's none of those things. It's a halacha. You have to pay your taxes. You have to contribute to society. You have to keep the laws of the country. You're not allowed to run a red light. You're not allowed to do things that are against the law. That's the country that we live in, makes those laws. That's a gemara. This isn't like chidushim. You're not allowed to violate the laws of the country. On top of that, to do something which is taking advantage of a system and chas v'shalom causing people to devolve into worse alcoholism, causing stress in society, things like that, that's a tremendous chilul Hashem. So if it's true, it's not clear to the extent at which the Jewish people were involved in this, which shuls were involved in this, etc. But to the extent that it is true, that was a tremendous chilul Hashem. And sadly, the people who were most fired up, the people who were most excited in the negative sense about this chilul Hashem were actually the reform and conservative movement. And because they were so obsessed with this issue, and they were so upset about it, it was so so disgusting to them that the Jewish people were taking advantage and bootlegging the alcohol and everything like that, they decided to do something about it. So in January of 1922, there was a person by the name of Professor Louis Ginsberg. Louis Ginsberg is a famous, or infamous, depending on how you want to say it, individual in Jewish history. He was a conservative rabbi. We'll leave it at that for now. There's a biography on him, and there's a lot to say about him. He was a conservative rabbi. So he wrote... He was a conservative rabbi who knew a lot of things. It happens to be, he knew a lot of things. It's not like it is today. It used to be the conservative rabbis would take all the knowledge and then try to convince us that the things that were usher are really mutter. They were always wrong. But at least they were using sources. At least they were trying to convince us. Or maybe it's worse now. It's more insidious. But the point is, that's what existed in the 1920s. That's not what conservative Judaism is now. Conservative Judaism now is not educated. It's not well-versed in anything in halacha. They just make things up and you don't need to be convinced anymore. It's just easier that way. Reform and conservative is not what they used to be. So Professor Louis Ginsberg wrote at that time, now could you imagine anyone doing this in this day and age, he wrote a 71-page responsum. 71-page tshuva, where he tried to prove and defended the position that grape juice is just as good as wine for Kiddush. And his point in doing so is that he had to prove something very specific. Pay attention. His point in doing so was to prove that not only is grape juice acceptable for Kiddush, but it is just as good as wine for Kiddush. Why is that so important? Because if you would write a whole tshuva and try to tell me that grape juice is acceptable for Kiddush, I would say, Shkayach, that's great, but I prefer wine, and therefore I should still have the Volstead Act at my side. However, what Louis Ginsburg was trying to convince the government was that no, grape juice is equal. We don't need wine at all. You don't have to give us this Volstead Act. We don't need the heter. We don't need the license to purchase alcohol for our shuls, for our chasanas, for our kiddushim, etc. We don't need that at all because grape juice is equally acceptable. No alcoholic content, no problem whatsoever. That was what he tried to point out. Now, just to be clear, that is Mesira. What Louis Ginsburg did is Mesira. He went to the government and he told them that the Jewish people don't need... He was wrong. He was dead wrong. He didn't know the halacha. We'll talk about it soon. But he told the government on the Jewish people. He mastered on the Jewish people. He gave us over in a way that wasn't appropriate. A person, Rahman al-Tzlan, is a danger to society, is causing real issues in society, and a person reports them in a way that they're, again, trying to stop the danger, trying to stop the threat from being in society, and a person needs to go to jail, a person needs to be reprimanded. That may not be Mesira, that's a different question, and that's obviously the responsible and correct thing to do, to keep the safety of the Jewish people. No one was being harmed overall by the Jewish people having Kiddush wine. We had to find a way to fix the Chil Hashem, but it wasn't right to go to the government and master on us. That doesn't make any sense. Either way, Louis Ginsburg did so, and he wrote this tshuva, and it was a significant moment in Jewish history where he tried to disprove a halacha in public, and the result was supposed to be that we weren't able to use a Kiddush wine anymore, but rather would have to use grape juice. Now, it's very interesting historically what followed. There are academic articles written about this. One is by Hannah Sprecha, but there are others as well. What happened afterwards, you'd expect an orthodox like explosion, pushing back, fighting him, yelling at him, telling him he got it all wrong. There was just like this long, awkward silence for 5 years. It's very interesting. I think Louis Ginsburg, they had a press conference when they released the tshuva. I don't know, what could you imagine a society in which you have a press conference to release a tshuva? But they had a press conference, they published the tshuva, and then there was 5 years of silence. Silence officially. Unofficially, if you read the biography, Louis Ginsburg, like I said, there's a lot written about him, but there's a particular biography, I think it's called Keeper of the Law, which is, in my opinion, an ironic title, but the Keeper of the Law was written by his son, Ellie Ginsburg, or Eli Ginsburg, I don't know how to pronounce it. Interesting read, I enjoyed it a few years ago, I have it somewhere in my house, it's buried somewhere. So he has a biography of his father, Louis Ginsburg, so he says during that five-year period, it's not that nobody said anything, he said they got death threats in the mail all the time. People would write threats to his father for having mastered on the Jewish people, for writing that Kiddush wine is unnecessary. His mother wouldn't allow him to walk outside at time alone because he was so nervous about being hurt. And that was the tkufa, that was the time period of 5 years following his tshuva. Now, again, awkward silence for 5 years, but the response came just a few years later, 5 years later, from a very unique individual and someone who is sort of like an obscure place to find the response. And that's where we come back to our tshuva of Ritzi Pesach Frank. Do you guys remember that we're learning the tshuvas of Ritzi Pesach Frank, by the way? That's how we got here. Okay, so we asked, right, we have pictures, right. So we asked in the beginning, who is this tshuva to, which we don't usually ask, and we saw it's to Yud Shin Horovitz. So first of all, the year we noted was Tafresh Pei Zion, right? What year is that? 1927, which sounds like it matches up with about 5 years after the 1921 tshuva of Louis Ginsburg. So in that time period, right after the tshuva was written, 5 years later, after that first response, who wrote the first response? You can guess at this point. Someone named? Well, he wrote our response that we're reading, but who's he responding to? Oh, this guy Horowitz, exactly. Okay, so after 5 years, the response appears in this very obscure sefer, Rabbi Yitzchak Simcha Horowitz, who lived in, anyone know? Hartford, Connecticut. So he wrote a sefer called Yad HaLevi, which was it was sort of like a commentary on the sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam. The Rambam, like other Rishonim, we've spoken in this past, he took time to count all the 613 mitzvahs for us to try to tell us where they appear and which mitzvahs are which mitzvahs. So in Mitzvah's essay, the positive commandment, Kuf Nun Hei, 155, Rabbi Yitzchak Simcha Horowitz from Hartford, Connecticut, again, the person in the beginning of our page, Yud Shin Horowitz, he puts forth a scathing attack on Ginsburg. It is ad hominem. It is tough. And he also attacks the Makoros and also builds a defense of the constant, the consistent Jewish practice throughout history before Louis Ginsburg tried to overturn it, which was to use wine for Kiddush. Now, basically, Rabbi Horowitz has two main arguments for wine for Kiddush as opposed to grape juice for Kiddush. If you look in the beginning of our tshuva, the bold over here, you see where it starts, Kaf Saf Resh. That stands for Kvot Haraso. So this is a tshuva written in response to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank having read Rabbi Horowitz's ideas about the matter. So he says, Kvot Haraso, meaning you, it's a nice way, honorific way of referring to the rabbi. Marich Bedin, how do you read that word? Hagrapius. It's more fun, I think we've spoken this in the past, reading Rav Moshe Feinstein's shoes. Rav Moshe Feinstein, he'll randomly try to say an English word, instead of translating into Hebrew, or instead of saying it in Yiddish, he'll just write the English out in Hebrew letters. So he'll say, like, is it mutter to play baseball? And you're like, what's baseball? Oh, it's baseball, you know? Or refrigerator, that's a fun one to try to read, right? Air conditioner, a lot of interesting words like that. So here you have grape juice. So he's a ma'arich, meaning he speaks lengthily about the din of grape juice, about whether grape juice is permissible in terms of what we're talking about in terms of making kiddush. Hu mitz anavim, it's grape juice. Shetekef l'schitas ha'anavim, now listen to how he describes it. Immediately after squeezing the grapes, pressing the grapes to make the juice, mevashtem oso, they cook the grape juice. Is that true? Is it really cooked or what? Pasteurized, we have to come back to that also. Pasteurized, right? Another famous Louis Pasteur. So you pasteurize the grape juice, and that's what we're referring to here as mevashlim, cooking. Now, there is true. You flash heat it, right? You heat it to a very high temperature for a short amount of time. So in that sense, you would think it's bishul. Mevashlim oso. V'al yedeza, what happens? Nifka mimenu koach ha'alcohol. What happens when you pasteurize the grape juice is that it no longer has the potency. It no longer has the sting of the alcohol. The alcohol is taken out, and in fact, the alcoholic content is not only removed, but also the potentiality for alcoholic content is removed. We have to come back to that, but it basically halts, at least temporarily, but potentially indefinitely, the fermentation process. We have to come back to that. B'li neder mitzvah Shem. V'yata lariv al zeh. So he says that's... Rabbi Horowitz, you came to fight against this. She'amar ki mitzvah min amuvcha l'kadesh ala grape juice. What are you talking about? It's a mitzvah min amuvcha. The right way to make kiddush, the proper way to make kiddush, is not to use grape juice. But someone was saying that it is, and you were arguing that it's not. V'hele sham la'alacha de'in mevarchim la'abroi p'ragafen. And he says, you, Rabbi Horowitz, you came out, l'maskani, your conclusion was that you can't even make a borei pri agafen on grape juice. Has anyone ever heard of someone who won't make agafen on grape juice? I have. I've heard of that. That is a possibility. We'll have to talk about whether we're going to get there, l'maskana. But apparently, Rabbi Horowitz felt that way. He felt that grape juice was not even borei pri agafen. V'chein, the point that we're coming to, in the kachin alav, you can't make kiddush on it. V'garua mishar meperos. It's worse than any other form of meperos, any other form of fruit juices. Now, we're going to leave that last four words on the side. But basically, there are two points that Rabbi Horowitz seems to have made that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank is responding to. One is that you can't make hagafen on it. It doesn't have the same bracha. It's a shahakal, apparently, grape juice. And two is that, and you would think these follow, but why necessarily? You would not be able to make kiddush on grape juice, only on actually on wine. Where is everything coming from over here? So let's go backwards. Let's start with the second, more basic point that the Rav Horowitz made, which is being pushed back against. The Magen Avraham and Aruch Chaim and Siman Reish Ayin Beis, in the Lachos of Kiddush, he writes, Mitzvah min amuvchar, which is what we just quoted in our piece over here, Mitzvah min amuvchar, it's preferable to use Yayin Yashan, aged wine, as opposed to a new wine, in order to make Kiddush. He basically is saying, it's permitted to use a new wine, but it's preferable to use a wine which is old. Now, just to be clear, he's not really referring to wine which is from the year 2010 versus wine which is from the year 1975. I don't know anything about wine, but he's not referring to this type of oak basket that it's been in, or this type of basket that it's, what, I don't know, how do you make wine?
Barrel.
He's not talking about different types of wine, like aged in that way. He literally means fresh wine versus wine that has time to ferment. That's what he's talking about. So he says it's preferable to use fermented wine. But what does that mean? It is permissible to use non-fermented wine. That's what it sounds like from the Magen Avraham, correct? Grape juice then, forget about now the pasteurization process. Grape juice, which is on the basic level, just squeezed grapes, it's pressed grapes, would be Permissible. Preferable? No. Wine that's been fermented would be preferable, but permissible, correct? Now, before we go anywhere, Louis Ginsburg is already wrong, right? What was he trying to prove? Not that grape juice was acceptable, but that grape juice was equal. Equal. Now, what we just saw in the Magen Avraham is, no, it's preferable to have old wine, meaning wine which is fermented. Grape juice is second best. It might be okay, it might work, but it's not the top, it's not equal to the top. The Mishnah Berurah quotes this, the Aruch HaShulchan and Reish Ayin Beis also bring this la'alacha. The poskim all say, like this Magen Avraham, that it's preferable to have a fermented wine. Louis Ginsburg had this Magen Avraham. He had a 71-page tshuva. He had to deal with it. He wasn't just writing poetry. So what did he say? He said what any good conservative rabbi back then would say. The Magen Avraham didn't have the proper text. He had an old text, but now we have the Cairo Geniza. Now we have this Geniza, that Geniza. We've seen new texts. He never would have said the way he said if he had altered texts and different girsos in the things in front of him. So he makes up some answer and tries to render the Magen Avraham irrelevant. Rabbi Horovitz is very bothered by this. He's not at all happy with the fact that Louis Ginsburg had the audacity to write the Magen Avraham out of halacha. The Magen Avraham was one of the preeminent poskim. He's on the page in Shulchan Aruch. We listen to his word. Half of the Mishnah Berurah is quoting the Magen Avraham. You can't just do away with him. You can't write him out of the story. So that's an inappropriate attempt to try to prove anyone wrong, to say the Magen Avraham misunderstood. That's crazy. It says in the Magen Avraham that it's preferable to use wine. And in fact, if you look in the tshuva here in front of you, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank continues, Hinei bezeh shehisig ala human da'amar. This that you argued on, you tried to catch, Hahu Manda Amar, the one who tried to allow grape juice as equal to wine, which was, we all know, Louis Ginsburg, right? You argued on Louis Ginsburg and you said, Shezeh mitzvah min amukha lekadeh shalav, that you said that it's better to make kiddush on wine. Bezev adai had said the gemalas kvodo. For sure you're correct about that. I don't have anything, he confers on this. I don't have anything to argue there. Demihuzesh yetzei neged ha-Magen Avraham. Who's this guy coming and fighting against the Magen Avraham? The Magen Avraham told us you should better to use wine than it is to use freshly squeezed grapes. There's no question about that. You can't really argue on that. But then Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank pivots and addresses the more seemingly controversial and the more, deep and fundamental point that Rav Horovitz makes, which is the question about whether the alcoholic content is a fundamental definitive quality of wine and is necessary for the act of Kiddush, or whether that's irrelevant in terms of halacha. So how does this all start? If you look in Rashi in Parshas Pinchas, Rashi quotes for us from the Chazal that wine which was used for nisachim, for the libations on the Mizbeach, in the Beis HaMikdash, the yayin ha-nisachim, the wine which was poured during the process of Karbanos, it had to be yayin ha-mishaker, it had to be intoxicating wine. If you had a wine that was dull, that was not alcoholic, that was not potent alcoholic, then you wouldn't be able to use it for a nesachim, for the libations on the Mizbeach. The Gemara in Bava Basra learns on Daf Tzadi Zayin that a lot of the halachas of Kiddush, the wine that we use for Kiddush, has to mimic the wine which was poured on the Mizbeach. Why would that be? There are limudim there, but basically speaking, it's wine which is used in the service of Hashem. Wine which is used in the service of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash has to be a certain way. It does follow that if we're talking about defining wine in halacha, it's also true that when used in the service of Hashem in making Kiddush on Friday night, it should have similar qualities. So because of that, the Gemara assumes there is a connection between the two of them. The Gemara has different distinctions between types of wine. But basically what Rabbi Horowitz sees in that Gemara is that he understands that just like by Nesachim, you need Yayin HaMishaker, which means intoxicating wine, so too by Kiddush, you'll need wine which intoxicates. Anyone have a reason that would be true? Meaning, let's say we agree that it's true that you should have a, what we call in Yiddish, a tzushtel, a juxtaposition of the two halachos. There should be carryover. There should be transmission between the two halachos. Let's say you assume that's good logically. What's the reason behind it? Why would you think that wine for Kiddush has to be wine that has alcoholic content? And therefore what? Oh yeah, correct. It should be equated with the Beis HaMikdash, absolutely. Now, if separately I told you, without the equation of the Beis HaMikdash, that wine is only called wine when it's intoxicating, why would that intoxicating be a factor? Why would that matter for Avodah Hashem?
Some person can have a small sip and be completely intoxicated.
Okay.
What percentage does it need?
Sure, sure. But objectively, it has potential.
For sure.
For sure, that might matter. If you have a wine that has a very low percentage and you want it to dilute it, it might matter at a certain point. It's not really considered wine anymore. Whatever the base is, whether it's 12% or it's 8%, whatever the 5% is, those bartenders, right? They're like a beer, those bartenders. A small amount of alcohol content, whatever the case might be, it has the potential to intoxicate in a small quantity or in a large quantity, depending on the build and the style of the person. Fine, and the speed of consumption. What?
It's more spiritual.
Oh. Good, good. If I told you that you have to make kiddush on something that's chashiv, you would agree to that. It has to be significant. It has to be a drink which has chashivas, has some shtaltz to it. It's something which is important. If I told you to make kiddush in an orange juice, or I really say orange juice, but my kids have this California accent now and it's really messing with me. Orange juice, yeah, I don't want to become like you guys. So you make kiddush on orange juice, or you make kiddush what else? Mango juice or something. So it's nice, it's sweet, but it's not chashiv. It's just another drink. You make kiddush on soda? Come on. What's wine? Wine is chashiv. Wine is a different level. Wine is higher up. What's higher up about it? What's so special about it? So Chazal tell us in multiple places that, based on a pasuk, yain levav enosh yisamach, or yisamach levav enosh, or something like that. So the pasuk tells us, and Chazal pick up on this, that wine, since it has an impact on a person's intellect, on a person's feeling, and yeah, on a person's spirituality as well, so since the wine has that impact on a person, it reaches deep within inside a person, so that makes it more chashiv, that makes it more significant, it makes it bigger, it makes it more important, and therefore it's usable for kiddush. If it's wine which is not intoxicating, this is all what Rav Horowitz says, by the way, if wine is not intoxicating, then what's the difference between this and any other juice? It's just another juice, it's just another soda, it's just another drink, not so chashiv, not so special. He says that's the defining quality of wine. That's why alcohol content matters and qualifies it as wine. Yeah.
So, there's two different things. There's the reason why, on one hand, we use wine,
right?
But that means that there's no inherent.
No. Pause. You didn't listen when I said pause. I need a new battery on this thing. Here, like this. What you said is correct in terms of the way you presented it, but then maybe we presented it a little bit ambiguously. What we mean to say is that wine objectively in this way, and if we say this answer, it might be true about the Mizbeach also. The reason why wine has to be alcoholic also for the Mizbeach, or also for the Nesachim, for the libations, is because a wine which is alcoholic in its content is more significant. That's true for the Beis HaMikdash, and it carries over to Kiddush. It's just a question of starting points, but it's probably a theme which carries over to both of them. We're talking about Kiddush, so we were focusing on Kiddush. Rabbi Horowitz is both focusing on Kiddush, so it has to be alcoholic in order for it to be chashiv to make Kiddush on it. That's what his initial argument is, and he points out that when a person goes through the process of making grape juice, what they do is they pasteurize that juice. That halts the fermentation process to the point at which he claims it's impossible for the juice to ever become alcoholic. And as such, he says, not only is this wine not alcoholic, but it can't become alcoholic either. That's important because the Gemara in Bava Basra is clear that if a person would squeeze grapes into a cup, so literally just, anyone ever do this, by the way? Does it taste like grape juice at all? Not really. It's probably more watery can't be sweeter than grape juice, but it's a different type of sweet. So if you squeezed grapes into a cup, and you drink it that way, in terms of Hilvos Brachos, we'll talk maybe a little bit soon, but in terms of Kiddush, that would be acceptable, actually, the Gemara assumes. But what's worth pointing out here is that this isn't just grapes in a cup squeezed, because that still has the potential to become alcohol. It's true that it is not alcoholic right now, but it's the type of drink which can become alcoholic through a natural process more easily than anything else, and therefore it's considered a wine in that way. But if you pasteurize it and you take away the ability to become alcoholic, that, he says, is much more problematic. And the truth is that in the Ksubim of Rav Henkin, and Rav Shtermach also has this in Mo'ad and Mizmanim in a few places, they follow that assumption. Again, we're going to come back to Rav Henkin soon, but they follow that assumption, at least initially, of the mitzias, of the reality, of the scientific truth, that once you pasteurize grape juice, it can no longer be reverted, it can no longer be fermented and become alcoholic, it can never become wine after that. So that's Rav Horowitz's basic argument. If you continue here in the source sheet, in the tshuva, in the bold, Aval mashem alas kvodo mosif, that which you add, de'ein levarech hazeh borei pir agafen mei mekadshin alav, that you can't make borei pir agafen. And you can't make kiddush on grape juice, meaning I agree with you on the first point, 1927, we're arguing against Louis Ginsburg. I agree with you that he is wrong. You can't argue on the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says that wine is preferable. It's definitely preferable. There's no arguing about that. Wine is preferable to grape juice. But then you went ahead and said you can't even make hagafen on grape juice, and you said you can't make kiddush on grape juice. That, says Ritzi Pesach Frank, lichora hifriz alamida. You went too far. He says, you went too far. That's a bit too extreme for me. That can't be true. Shahari b'shulchan arach, hichriya ka rashu d'imo, d'yayin mevushal mebirchaso b'ripyagafin u mikadshin alav. This argument that Ritzi Pesach Frank just made in Hebrew, which we're going to come back to now in English, that cuts to the core of the need for wine, and it cuts to the core of the halachas of the brachos on wine, and it cuts to the core of the halachas of kiddush on wine, and therefore we have to backtrack in order to understand everything he packed in to five words over here. There's a whole sugya behind this. We're not going to go too far in depth, but at least we should get a little familiarity with the place from which Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank is coming. The pasuk tells us in Parshas Yisro, it's not in Parshas Vayeschanan, it's one of the changes in the Aseret Dibros, but the pasuk in Parshas Yisro tells us, Zachor es Yom HaShabbos LeKadosho. What does that mean, Zachor? Remember or commemorate, and it means that in the I think we spoke about this in the past, actually. I don't remember when or why, but in the active, sort of consistent, constant sense. So it's not just zechor, meaning you should take time to remember Shabbos, but actually you should consistently, constantly have a commemoration of Shabbos, even throughout the weekday. Didn't we talk about this once? I just don't know why. Why do we talk about that? Like every other tangent you're saying, I don't have to answer that question. Oh, you're right. Yeah, very good. Amor Lahem. Right. We spoke in Berachas Kohanim about Amor Lahem. Very good. So Rashi, there comments that Amor is the same setup as Zachor. Very good. So Zachor is Yom HaShabbos LeKadosho. So it means to commemorate Shabbos. What does it mean to commemorate Shabbos? So it might mean to say the Shir Shal Yom every day. It might mean to buy special foods for Shabbos during the week. It can mean a whole bunch of things. But the Gemara in Pesachim Adav Kuf Vav tells us that it means something else as well. It means Zachreyu Al Hayayin. You shall commemorate Shabbos upon wine. You should use wine as the object of commemoration of Shabbos, meaning you should make kiddush on wine on Shabbos. That's what the Gemara in Pesachim, fascinating, it understands the pasuk to mean, Zachreyu al yayin. The truth is the Gemara in Eir ben Adaf Mem adds one other facet to this, one other detail, which is Hamevarich Tzarech Sheyitom, that if you make kiddush on wine on Shabbos, Tzarech Sheyitom, the person who makes the kiddush has to taste the wine, they have to drink from the wine as well. So there's this idea of making kiddush, of Zachrehu. There's an idea of Zachrehu al yayin, the Gemara in Pesachim says from the Pasuk. And it's Zachrehu al yayin, hamivarech Tzarech Sheyitom. There's an idea of actually tasting, of actually drinking from the wine upon which you've made the kiddush. What is Daraisa? What is Darabanan? Is everything there from Pasuk? Zachrehu al yayin. The Pasuk says, Zachar Tzayam HaShabbos LeKadosho. So making kiddush on wine is biblical? That's a mitzvah Daraisa? Is that true? Is it Darabanan? Is it possible it's Darabanan? It seems to come from a pasuk. So there's basically three opinions in the Rishonim over here. It's very important to know this. Tosfos and Maseches Nazir on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. I don't do Daf Yomi, but not so long ago they did Nazir, I think. It wasn't so long ago. Probably feels like a long time ago if you're in the middle of Gittin or something. But Nazir on Daf Dalet in the very beginning, and the Rambam in the end of Hilchos Shabbos, they're quite clear that Kiddush is Daraisa. That's absolutely true. Zachor is Yom HaShabbos LeKadosho. Making Kiddush on Friday night is certainly Daraisa. But the necessity for Kiddush al Yayin is only Midarabanan. The idea that you actually need wine is only Midarabanan. I don't understand. Didn't the Pasuk say Zachor is Yom HaShabbos LeKadosho? And the Gemara said that means with wine. What's the answer? Even having wine, they think, is only Darabanan. Not only drinking it, even having it. So there's a concept in halacha that not everything that you see in the Gemara that quotes a pasuk is actually a drasha. Sometimes it's just an asmachta. Sometimes it's just a smach, meaning it leans on the pasuk. This is a din derabanan. The rabbis instituted a din that when you make kiddush, you should have a cup of wine in front of you. And they saw a hint to it, or they saw the Ratzon Hashem coming through, peeking through, peering through the surface of the Torah. And they said, if you look in this pasuk, you'll see a hint, a remez, to this halacha of making kiddush with wine in front of you. But it's not actually biblical. It's not actually a mitzvah daraisa to have wine. That's just a derabanan they added on. That's a possibility. That's what the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos and Maseches Nazir say. Tosfos and Maseches Shavuos and Daf Chaf say differently. They say that kiddush al yayin is in fact daraisa. The Gemara in Pesachim says it, Zachrei al yayin. That means that to make kiddush and pour wine in a cup and make the kiddush over that wine is all biblical. Tasting it, that's only a din derabanan. Tasting it is rabbinic. That was added on later on. But actually making kiddush on wine is daraisa. We're talking about a mitzvah daraisa here. When we have this whole discussion about the prohibition, about Louis Ginsburg, and about the Rabbi Horowitz, and about Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, we're talking about a mitzvah daraisa of making kiddush on wine. The difference between whether grape juice is acceptable or not is whether you're fulfilling a mitzvah in the Torah, one of the Taryag 613 mitzvos of making kiddush on wine on Shabbos. The last opinion, which is the most extreme, is Rashi. It's not really Rashi. It's Suda Rashi, the Mefarish, the commentary on the side of the page of Maseches Nazir. Sometimes, a few times, not so often, but a few times in Shas, you'll have Gemaras where it says Rashi on the inside column of the page, and usually that's where Rashi is. It's in Rashi script and everything, but Rashi didn't actually write on that Masechta. You have it in a few places, Mod Katan, a certain place in Makas, which is Nazir. Nedarim is not Rashi. So there are a few Masechtas in which Rashi is not actually Rashi. It's someone who wrote in the style of Rashi. Maybe it's a student of Rashi. In some of the instances, by the way, later on in history, we discovered Rashi's manuscript and you'll find Rashi, and then on the bottom of the page you'll find Rashi Ksav Yad, which means actual Rashi. Rashi, you know, that actually wrote the Rashi. So here it's not actually Rashi, but it's some Rishon, someone from that generation or two afterwards. So he has a very mechudish, very, very novel opinion that not only is Kiddush Daraisa, that's obvious, not only is Kiddush on wine Daraisa, that's possible, but actually tasting the wine is also biblical. So making Kiddush on wine and drinking that wine is all biblical, all the Raisa, the Tosfos written in Maseches Pesachim seems to understand this way as well. Rashi comes to it, or fake Rashi comes to it, from a Gemara over there, where the Gemara basically says that if someone takes a neder to be a Nazir, he decides to be a Nazir, is he allowed to make Kiddush on wine on Shabbos? So there, the Gemara entertains the possibility that no, he's mushba ve'omei mehar Sinai, meaning when he was at the foot of the mountain of Har Sinai, being makabel the Torah, and Hashem said, Zachar es yom, or Moshe Rabbeinu said, Zachar es yom haShabbos l'kadosho, that you have to keep Shabbos, you have to make Kiddush on wine and drink it. So now, from Har Sinai, I took a shvuah already. I swore that I was going to make Kiddush on Friday night and drink wine when I did so. Now I'm taking a shvuah to uproot that. That can't be. So maybe you're already mushba ve'omein me'har Sinai. Maybe you already have this swear on yourself to drink the wine from earlier on. So you can't undo that when you take on Naziris later on. That's where Rashi's coming from, fake Rashi's coming from, that it sounds like even from Har Sinai, midaraisa, on a biblical level, it's already true. It's already true that you need to make Kiddush on wine and actually drink the Kiddush wine as well. So that's basically the background in terms of the mitzvah of Kiddush and where wine plays into it. Now, when we go to Hilchos Brachos, you'll find the Rishonim make this jump between Brachos and the Kiddush. So we have a Gemara in Brachos and Daf Lamed Ches. Generally speaking, the Gemara assumes, the Halacha assumes, that fruit juices are not, let's say you have apples. So apples are ha'etz. Anyone here ever make ha'etz on apple juice? Chakal. Oranges are ha'etz. Anyone ever make ha'etz on orange juice? No. Why not? Why not? So the Gemara says when you squeeze a fruit, the fruit is the ikr. The fruit is the main part. That's the creation. That's the chashuv species that was created by the tree. When you squeeze out the juice from the fruit, that's what the Gemara refers to as zeya ba'alma. It's kind of a not an appetizing way of thinking about it, but it's sweat. It's just schwitz from the apple, from the orange. What was... Is that what the ads for Snapple used to be? A bunch of they would schwitz and they would make Snapple out of it? Anyone remember this? It sounds like made from the grossest stuff on earth, not best stuff on earth. Some, whatever. But you see now it came to my mind, the Tropicana ads. You know, it's the orange and there's a little oozing out of it. There's a little bit of a juice. So that's really what it is. It's just an orange that's schwitzing. It schwitzes into your cup and then you have orange juice. That's convenient. But it's just the schwitz of the fruit. It's just the sweat of the fruit. Zeya ba'alma. The fruit is ha'etz. The fruit is the highest level. Then you take out the lesser level from it, you squeeze out the juice, that's going to be shahakal. That's going to be true about apples and all other fruits and vegetables as well. The only exception to that is grapes, because grapes are not hagafen. Grapes are? And then when you squeeze them and you make grape juice or wine, they are? Hagafen, correct. So what happened there? So there the Gemara says, no, wine is the exception, wine is different. Pay attention here because ishtani li'iluya, because it changes and becomes more significant. It goes up in level. Grapes are just grapes. Grapes are just regular fruit. You squeeze them, you ferment them, you make them wine. Now they're a chash of a royalty. They're a real drink. You know, grapes is something. It's a fruit. But once you squeeze them and make them to a juice, that's already a chash of a drink. That's already ready for kings. It's fit for malachim. And that's ishtani li'uliya. It goes up in levels. It's a higher level of a drink. And therefore, it gets a bracha higher up than it did originally. It doesn't go down to shahakal. It actually moves up to barei pri agafen. Yeah. So we obviously assume wine and grape juice are barei pri agafen. Because of that, the Beis Yosef in Simon Reish Beis quotes the Rishonim who hold that this is only changed if you cook it. Meaning, if you have grape juice, you have wine that was squeezed out of the grape, it's ishtani li'uliya. But some of the Rishonim say that if you cook that wine now, you've lowered the level. You've lowered the level, you've taken it back down, and it becomes shakal. So that's an interesting discussion that the Beis Yosef quotes. But he says, most of the Rishonim disagree. Most of the Rishonim assume, and he quotes this in Shulchan Aruch, it's in Reish Beis, most of the Rishonim assume that once you have grape juice, once you have wine, even if you cook it, it doesn't take it down. Once it becomes wine, it's wine. Even if you have cooked wine, most of the wine you guys drink is cooked, correct? I think fancy wines you're going to start talking, anyone here is more of a connoisseur, you talk about non-cooked wines, fine, but most of the wine we buy in the store and we consume is cooked wine. That's not Hagafen? No, the majority opinion in the Beis Yosef and the Rishonim, and the Paskin Halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and the Mishnah Berurah assumes this way as well, is that wine is considered wine even after it's been cooked, even after it's mavushal, it's still considered wine. Absolutely. Now, there's no reason to think that anything would change by kiddush either, correct? Meaning if the bracha is always going to be hagafen, then that meaning it's always going to maintain its status as wine, even after it's been cooked. The same should be true for kiddush, that even after it's been cooked, you're still going to be allowed to make kiddush on it. Is that correct? Would everyone agree with that? We've assumed there's carryover until now, and why shouldn't there be carryover going forward? But the plot thickens a little bit over here. The Gemara in Bava Basra on Daf Tzadi Zayin says that for wine to be suitable for kiddush, it needs to be acceptable. What do you remember from before? For which mitzvah? Nesachim, the libations on the Mizbeach. Very good. It has to be acceptable on the Mizbeach. And based on that, the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos says, he quotes this halacha that it has to be ra'i, it has to be fit for the Mizbeach, for libations. And he says, we know that yain mevushal, cooked wine, is not acceptable for pouring on the Mizbeach by the Karbanos. So even if you could have a split personality over here. Even if you make a hagafen on wine that's been cooked, yain mevushal, you may still not be able to make kiddush on it. Because even though it's definitely still considered wine for brachos, but when it comes to kiddush, there's a different factor over here, which that has to be usable for karbanos, it has to be usable for nesachim. And because of that, it could be that your hagafen doesn't necessarily mean that it's suitable, that it's acceptable for kiddush. That's the Rambam's opinion, which is, the Rambam's no slouch. We seriously care about the Rambam. And I'm not just saying that because I know there are Svardim in the room. We actually care about the Rambam a lot. He was a big gadol. He was the biggest Rishon. But the Beis Yosef here too quotes that the majority of the Rishonim are against the Rambam. They disagree with the Rambam, and they assume that even when you cook the wine, it is suitable, it is usable for Kiddush. In Siman Reish Ayin Beis, the halachas of Kiddush, in Hilchos Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch quotes both opinions. He quotes the Rambam as a Yesh Omrim, but he paskins lahalacha. He decides lahalacha that yain mevushal, cooked wine, may be used for Kiddush. The Mishnah Berurah thinks that the Rama assumes it's preferable to use yain that's not mevushal for Kiddush, but that you are allowed to use mevushal wine. But that's the Mishnah Berurah's opinion based on the Rama, but that's not the Shulchan Aruch's opinion. By the way, it's interesting, the Shmir Shabbos Kolchasa notes from Neuvert, he says that there's another reason a person would want to use mevushal wine by, let's just say, for a yontif meal right now. Why would that be? Right. If you have non-mavushal wine, the issue is if a non-Jew touches it, or if a non-Shomer Shabbos, someone who's not from, touches your wine, that will ruin the wine. That will make it stam yenam. You're not allowed to drink wine that's been touched by a non-Jew. If the wine's been cooked already, if it's been mavushal already, then you are allowed to use it even after it's been touched. That's not just TBGBs. That has a basic reason, which is that the concern, the gezerah, it's a derabanan, but the concern of stam yenam, of using wine which was touched by a non-Jew, is that we're concerned they had thought or did use it for Avodah Zarah. But apparently cooked wine wasn't used in the Avodah Zarah process. So as long as it's cooked, they wouldn't use it, and that would avoid the problem. So the Shmir Shabbos Klasa says, if you're having a Yontif meal, you're having a Shabbos meal and you're having over a non-Jewish guest or something like that, so then if he touches the wine, that's not it's not so good if it's not mevushal. So it's better to use mevushal wine on Shabbos if you're having a non-Jewish guest or a not-from guest, because they would ruin your wine otherwise. The reason why we're saying Shabbos, not Yontif, is because on Yontif there's a different issue of having a non-Jew over for a meal, or potentially not-from Jew, as Machlovas in the Poskim. So we're talking about Shabbos because we're limiting it so we don't have to get into another discussion. But if you had someone like that over on Shabbos, having mevushal wine would save you from a lot of issues. Yeah.
For Pesach,
it's big. Again, assuming you're even allowed to have guests who aren't Jewish or aren't from at the Seder, which is a discussion in the postgame. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the two. Well, so what? Once we know all these halakha, yeah.
When you're squeezing the grapes into a cup and you have no intention of making wine, you're still making that cup because of the
potentiality. Right.
Even if I have no intention of making wine.
I think so. Yeah. It's objective. It's objective in that way. Once we're talking about these halachos, we have to define what is bishul, what's considered cooking on wine, because is pasteurization really cooking or it's not cooking? So we're going to skip the long of this, and we're going to stick with the short of it. But basically, there's a machlokas that the tour quotes in some Reish Ayin Beis as to whether yayin, wine, which is boiled even a little bit, is bashal afilu ma'at, even if it's cooked just the tiniest amount, is that already considered bishul? Or no, it has to be boiling, seething, it has to be really really bubbling for a long period of time in order to be considered cooked. What's the nafkamina? What's the difference? Who cares? Which case will be the in-between case? obviously pasteurization. Pasteurization, they flash heat it for a split second. It's not like a long process. So it gets pretty hot, but only very, very briefly, a very short amount of time. So because of that, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in Minchas Shlomo, he has a tshuva where he argues that our grape juice and even our wines are heated only briefly to be pasteurized. They're not really cooked in that way. And therefore, he thinks lakula for kiddush, everyone would agree it's okay because it's not actually mevushel. And lachumra, stringently, for the halachas of stam yenam. That if you have a wine that was pasteurized but not literally cooked over a pot for a long time, if a non-Jew would touch it, it would be a problem. So that, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, is very interesting, and also not the majority opinion. Rav Adi Yosef shows that many people disagreed. Rav Moshe Feinstein disagreed with this. So that's certainly not the mainstream opinion. But the mainstream opinion is that pasteurization does count as cooking. So does that ruin wine that's been cooked? Or does that ruin potentially grape juice that's been cooked? What's the answer? No, because the Shulchan Aruch said, there are Rishonim, like the Rambam, who say that you can't use cooked wine for Kiddush, but we don't hold that way. We hold that cooked wine is perfectly acceptable for Kiddush. Maybe Yayin She'enu Mevushel, uncooked wine, is better in some level, according to the Rambam, maybe, but it's certainly permissible to have cooked wine for Kiddush, and again, according to most people, that would be Hagafen as well. So based on all this, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank said five words. But this is what he's referring to. He's referring to this whole background. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank basically is saying that there's no issue with the cooked wines and with grape juice just because they're cooked, because we paskin that cooked wine is permissible to use for Kiddush, and it is also Borei Priya Gafen. The other point that the Rebbe Horovitz made, which was that it's non-alcoholic at this point because it's no longer able to ferment once they cook it, so that also has some pushback in the later poskim. I mentioned before that Rav Henkin agreed with that reality, but in a later tshuva, in that same sefer of the Ksavim of Rav Henkin, he writes that he was informed that his original letter was based on false information. Apparently, grape juice truly does have the potential to ferment. I don't know the science that well, but Mr. Feivish Herzog, you know where that last name comes from. So Mr. Feivish Herzog, he told Rabbi Henkin, or even actually showed Rabbi Henkin, that if you left out the grape juice in room temperature, and if you add some sugar and yeast, whatever, you can get it to ferment. It can become alcoholic.
If you were to stop right here, would it be right to say...
Are you implying something? Have I been going too long? Is that...
Would it be right to say that grape juice equals bushel wine?
Yes, meaning, so where are we stopping?
Not
I know, but are we considering the alcoholic part or no? Where are we stopping?
What you just said when you
right, right, okay, so then yes, then you could imagine it being on par, potentially. That being said, the Magen Avraham added one factor, which was that he would prefer fermented over potential to ferment. So in that way, it would be more preferable to use wine. It wouldn't be equal. It would be equally acceptable, but it would be preferable to use wine still. Either way, it would be perfectly acceptable, like you just said, for Kiddush and Avdalah, and that's why Rav Henkin ended up turning around and coming out and saying, no, grape juice, it's not even true. Grape juice can ferment. You might not ferment it, but it can ferment, and therefore it's not even a problem. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank certainly comes out the way. Rav Shlomo Zalman certainly held grape juice is acceptable. Rabbi Chalap has an article, Rabbi Chalap from YU in an old Beis Yitzchak journal, he has an article where he records that both Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik felt this way as well. Rabbi Chalap is quoting a grandson of Rav Soloveitchik who reported that Rav Soloveitchik himself made kiddush on grape juice. And that was supposed to be the proof that you were allowed to do so according to his opinion. There are conflicting reports about this. Some of the... What's that? Usually a brisker chumra would be the Bimak on the Rambam. He doesn't have every brisker chumra, but yeah. So there are some other Talmidim. Again, this was from a grandson, which is pretty reliable, a very reliable grandson. And there are other conflicting reports from students who said that Rav Soloveitchik didn't feel that way. It could be he said one thing in Shir, could be taught the Rambam, could be did differently. I don't know. Could be different stages in life. Could be alcohol at one point was hard for him to handle. A million answers, but it's a little bit out there for debate. Rav Moshe Feinstein apparently said it was okay as well. Rav Moshe Sternbach has two tshuvas about this, where he basically says that according to everything we just spelled out, it's perfectly permissible to use grape juice. It's hagafen, and it's able to be used for kiddush. But at the end of the day, it's better to use wine because that's what the Magen Avraham told us, that it's more preferable. Whether or not the Minhag Yisrael, I think, is certainly to equally rely on grape juice and Kiddush wine, whether or not that's true, it's certainly not true what the others had tried to argue, the conservative rabbinate tried to argue, which is that they're equal and therefore the government shouldn't give us an allowance to use wine. That wasn't true. There is a preference. Halacha says there's a preference. Something could be permissible, and someone who has a strong aversion to wine may therefore partake of grape juice, but that doesn't make it equal. That just makes it acceptable, and you can't change the halacha based on the conveniences of your time that you're trying to shift things to. So that's the basics, the ins and outs of the halachas of grape juice and wine for Kiddush. We didn't get to the idea of using schnapps for Kiddush, but you could read the tshuva on the back, and you could see what Rav Pesach Frank says and the many other posts. Come and ask your local Orthodox rabbi. Until then, everyone have a wonderful rest of the day.